Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is hoping that we don't fumble this opportunity like Derrick Henry. What is happening with you, Derrick Henry? What are we doing, my guy?
It was glorious. It was amazing. Anytime Baltimore loses, I'm just so happy.
Haters, man.
Well, I mean, you pick a team to root for, you pick a team to root against. Doesn't necessarily mean hating, although there is some hate
involved. It's a little bit of hate.
You blamed it on Derrick Henry, but...
No, I didn't blame it just on Derrick Henry, for the record.
Well,
I also blame it on the Ravens offensive line getting Lamar sacked 7 times.
Defensive line unable to stop the run. Also,
Montgomery's a dog.
Those fumbles were caused by the Detroit defense. It wasn't like he went,
That last fumble was like textbook football from Aiden Hutchinson. Kids, if you want to grow up and be a world-famous defensive lineman, I just need you to watch Aiden Hutchinson. Like, that guy's a machine. He's a juggernaut.
Coming back from injury. I mean, that's the other thing. You would think he would have lost a step. Maybe he has, but you couldn't tell last night.
Aiden Hutchinson's a dog. The Ravens' offensive line is a steaming pile.
If you are a Ravens fan, you need to be concerned. And if you are an opponent of the Ravens, all you got to do is run the ball. That's all you
got
to do.
I got a hard time disagreeing right now. It's a real tough time disagreeing with that. And again, if Lamar Jackson gets sacked 7 times, a regular quarterback gets sacked 14 times in that game. Like, Lamar, I am very okay, while I live and die by the battle cry, that wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. Because wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. I am also fine with saying that sometimes in losses, quarterbacks are the opposite of the reason that a team lost. And sometimes quarterbacks pitch in to an L quite a bit. Lamar Jackson did not pitch into an L last night. Like, Lamar Jackson was doing everything he could do last night. He was just... My man was staring down the barrel of a Panzer the entire night, and that Panzer's name was Aiden Hutchinson.
I think he got a little punch drunk near the end of the game where he could have been a little more patient, and it's just any sign of white jerseys and he was moving. I mean, not moving to run, moving to throw, but still, I mean, there are times maybe he could have stood in there. More than likely, there was no one open.
You ever been in a car accident?
Yes, unfortunately.
Okay. Me too. And I can tell you that. Now, it's been a while. Since I got clobbered in the Jeep back when I had the Jeep. And I'm not in the neighborhood anymore that accident happened, at least not very often. But I will tell you, every time I drive past the place where I had a truck pull out in front of me and crumple the Jeep, every time I drive that particular stretch of road, you better believe the head goes on a swivel. You get trigger shy. Right? That was Lamar Jackson all damn night last night. It's like every time that they ran any sort of contained block on Aiden Hutchinson, right? Like, they had Ronnie Stanley's over there on the left tackle. It blew my mind. They were pointing out that Hutch, who last year typically and traditionally lined up on the left edge, last night he was kind of bouncing back and forth. And then I'm like, who is the Ravens' right tackle? Like, it would make sense to me if there was a rookie right tackle or you know, maybe a maybe a backup starting over there or whatever. No, like it's Ronnie Stanley. That's a multi-time Pro Bowler, and Hutch is going 50-50 right to left. But I'm watching this play out, and every time that Baltimore tried to run any sort of contain block on Hutch, right? Left tackle tries to get outside shoulder on Hutch and drive him back to the inside because they want to get, you know, whoever out to the left, whether it was Henry or Hill or whoever. Every time they tried to run a contain on Aiden Hutchinson, the dude just went afterburners to the football. And the part about it that I loved the most about Hutch was, you know, this is one of those spots where I'm watching this happen, and I, to use a wrestling term, I start fantasy booking what I would do if I'm the offensive coordinator, all right? Stretch blocks are letting Aiden Hutchinson just blow past Pro Bowler Ronnie Stanley and get into the backfield. How do I game plan around that? I'm looking at some screens, right? I'm probably going to run away from him as many times as I can. I'm coming to the line with a stretch play that's going away from Hutch every time. It is going to be audible at the line. When you are walking to the line, you find Hutch, and whichever side he's on, we're running the stretch to a million different things, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Aiden Hutchinson has just skyrocketed up the list of dudes that if I'm a middle or high school coach and I'm trying to teach my kids how to play on the D-line, I'm just pulling game film from last night. I'm pulling every snap that Hutch was on the field last night, and I'm like, that, do that. Everything he did, that's what you do now.
He wasn't the only one either. That entire defense was having their way, for the most part, with especially later in the game. I know that I've been lied to by the hype. The hype lies a lot, and the hype told me that defense for Baltimore is one of the best they've ever had. That's what the hype told me.
I'm not disagreeing,
and the
but
people
I would.
Who were spreading that hype are supposedly experts. And all I know is in the AFC right now, it looks like there's one leader.
I would.
And without a doubt, it's Buffalo. They're going to win everything.
I would hold your metaphorical horses for uno momento because.
The hype usually lies, by the way.
I would hold your metaphorical horses for uno momento. And I would hold them for.
They're Clydesdales, by the way.
Whatever kind of horses they are, hold them. All right? Just hang on to them for a second. The Ravens are 1-2. Who are the two? The team you just described, you described as the obvious front runner right now in the AFC, which is Buffalo. And until the Chiefs dive back into this thing, yes, that's correct.
Right, Buffalo's undefeated, right?
Yes. So you hang on.
Dominantly undefeated, I believe.
Well, I would hold our horses on that. Because who's the one team that gave Baltimore a holy bleep game back in week one? The Baltimore Ravens. That's the only team that's given Buffalo a game.
Baltimore.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I was excited to get to my point. The only team,
they beat themselves.
The only team that has given the Buffalo Bills a game so far that was like a, and for the record, thus far through 3 weeks, game of the year was Baltimore in week one.
Also, after game one, Detroit, it looked like, well, maybe they're not going to be that good.
Correct.
And now they're starting to get mid-season form, even though it's still early in the season.
Correct. So I think my point here about Baltimore would be I wouldn't write them off at 1-2 quite yet because the only two teams that they have lost to were the number one short odds team to win the Super Bowl in the AFC and the number one number one short odds team to win the Super Bowl in the NFC.
If they give up that amount of yards on the ground next week, will you start to be worried?
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. Yes is the answer. They gave up 224 rushing yards, including a buck 51 to Montgomery. 72 of them came on one play.
Well, they were getting 6 to 8 yards a clip when they ran the ball.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
And it was good blocking, but it was also bad tackling on Baltimore's side.
I'm not disagreeing with anything you were saying about Baltimore, to be clear. You are correct. That Baltimore defense right now is
why do you always have to go opposite of me? Why couldn't you like be on my side on this case and agree with me?
Because it sounds like you're writing them off. And I think that is probably a bridge too far for me.
I didn't write them off. I was talking about how the hype lied because the hype was like, this is the team this year. And the hype was wrong. And speaking of, you know who their next opponent is, right?
Who does Baltimore have this week? Are we up? Is it y'all's turn already?
It is the Chiefs, yes.
Let's see what the early line on that game is. I'm going to say right now.
I think I heard earlier that the line had changed after last night.
I'm sure it has. That's why I'm curious as to what it is this morning.
But the Chiefs are still underdogs.
My pick was going to be right now, I would set that line at Ravens -2.5. I'm going to say I'm going to put it as a field goal game. I'm going to say Ravens -2.5 is my pick right now.
Let's hope it's not a field goal game or the Chiefs are in trouble.
And that's exactly what it is. Ravens -2.5 as it stands right now. So first off, hashtag nailed it.
Wow. And the problem is, you know, it's the Chiefs at home. So
that means that Vegas believes that the Ravens are about a touchdown better than Kansas City right now. And to be honest with you, you know what this is? This is a Notre Dame situation where we spent all last week verbally elbow dropping Notre Dame for being ranked at 0-2 and deserved, because there were a handful of teams below Notre Dame that were undefeated, had won two or three games at that point. And we were all beating up on Notre Dame. And again, that's a correct way to have handled that. They should not have been ranked at 0-and against a team that was 3-and. It shouldn't have happened. But at the same time, I pointed out last week, and after Notre Dame looked like the Irish expected this week, I said, like, I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. It is a spot where you go, Notre Dame had, we keep talking about South Carolina having the toughest 7-game stretch in the back half. Notre Dame had the toughest 2-game stretch to open the season in football, in college football. Nobody had a tougher opening two contest in college football than Notre Dame. And so, you know, we say every year that there should be some level of reward and recognition for teams that actually line it up and play good teams. And the reward and recognition for Notre Dame was, yeah, you're 0-2, but even as an 0-and team, we recognize that that's a tough 0-and. Like, those two spots were tough wins, especially now. Miami, now #2 in the country. Texas A&M, now #9, 8, whatever they are in the country. Notre Dame's two losses, both of them to top 10 teams 2 weeks later. So it's kind of like, on one hand, no, they shouldn't have been ranked at 0-and, but on the flip side, I understand why they were ranked at 0-and. That's kind of where I am with Baltimore right now. Like, Baltimore is 1-2. There's a lot of 1-2 teams that we are writing off and going to say, nope, they're done. Like, there's not bounce
so
back.
So right now you pick Baltimore to win.
Right now, today, yes.
Okay.
Right now, today, I would say yes. And here's why.
You know what? You'd be wrong today and Friday. You'll be wrong, too, if you pick it.
We'll find out. But, Zoe, if I asked you right now offensively, what's the weakness of the Kansas City Chiefs? What is it? I say running the football.
It is. You're right.
Okay. How do you beat Baltimore?
But it's not. Is they haven't been calling the running game. They keep going away from it. And Kareem Hunt right now is better than Pacheco. And if they put him in, when they put him in, he is getting a ton of yards. If they finally figured out, okay, let me just put Kareem in there and let him run the ball. And also, you got Kareem Hunt and Pacheco. And you see what happened last night. What was the name of the running backs that did that?
Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. I'd be real careful about saying Jahmyr Gibbs ain't a dog.
By the way, I Jahmyr was going to say, would you at least compare the two evenly, or would you say that Detroit has a leg up, that those running backs are better than Pacheco and Kareem Hunt?
Over the history of their careers, I'd say it's even. Through three games, I'd say Detroit has a leg up. Not much. It's like a little leg. It's like a stone man leg. It's a little baby leg.
I think you're looking at overall. I'm just talking about the running backs themselves. I'm not talking about the offensive lines that they're running behind. I'm just talking about the running backs, the quality of running backs, and probably, if we look at the stats, I would guess probably Kareem Hunt has better stats than all of them.
Well, we can check that. But here's what I do know. My favorite, I don't know why it's my favorite, favorite phrase that somebody said. I've heard it a million times growing up, but for some reason somebody said it to me a couple of weeks ago, and it's just like, I was like, that saying is absolutely bat bleep insane. If my aunt had wheels, she'd be a bicycle. It's like, I get the point of it, but that is that the best way we can come up with saying if Like, if Kansas City. Yes, I agree with you, if Kansas City. We're 3 weeks into the season. You haven't done it yet. It's kind of that spot of, yes, if Kansas City does this. But I've got 3 weeks of film so far, and they haven't yet. And I would say, after you lost to San Diego, you lost to L.A., in week one.
The number one team. In
agreed. But they weren't at the time. At the time, you were 0-1 against a team that we were going, maybe they're back, maybe they're good, maybe they're not.
When you played, that was the first game. And so no one had anyone.
That's what I'm saying.
You said 0-1. So no one knew who the number one team was at that point.
Okay, I shouldn't have said at 0-1. And week one, before you had any other games, yes. We all went, maybe the Superchargers are a squad this year. We're going to find out. You went 0-1.
When we were picking, I said to look out for them.
I agree. And so did I. Yeah. It's not a bad pick, but the point is we still didn't know. We thought. But at the time, we didn't know what anybody was in week one. That's kind of the fun of week one. Now, with that being said, I would have thought with the importance of the game you had in week two against Philly, and it being at the home, we must protect this house, a click-clack, and with the narrative you know was attached to the result of that game, I would have thought if that was going to happen, and if you know you've got to keep A.J. Brown, Saquon Barkley, and Jalen Hurts off the field, that would have been a spot Kansas City starts to lean on the run game to control the game. You didn't do it then either. And then, yes, you won week three. But it was, to me, dramatically closer game than it needed to be down the stretch. And there's a bunch of other reasons that go on there, but the tape is the tape at this point.
In the end, these are two teams with one win, I believe.
That is correct.
Yeah, so I mean, these are two losing teams playing each other.
But again, I would make the argument that, because context and nuance in every conversation is important here on the Rob Brown Show, Baltimore's two losses are better than your two losses. Even though your two losses are to the defending Super Bowl champs and to the LA Chargers, who, yes, wow. I agree.
Wow. Okay.
Who's a better two losses?
Okay. Any loss is a bad loss.
No, see, again, like this is something that you and I have butted heads on the entire time we've worked together. No two losses are equal and no two wins are equal. It's just not, like, I understand at the end of the year when we determine the playoffs, we don't go, well, they had one more loss, but they had better losses. That's college football. We absolutely do that.
That's college for sure.
In the NFL, it's just an objective reality. You have X wins and X losses, and everybody else has X wins and Y losses, and that's why you fit into this bracket the way you fit into it. But for the context of the conversation we're having, yeah, Baltimore had two close losses against the shortest odds to win the Super Bowl from the NFC and the shortest odds to win the Super Bowl in the AFC. I think that there's something to be said for that. All right, let's take a break. We're going to talk a lot of NFL on the show this morning. We will get back to college football as well because, hey, for the folks that have been saying for a while, you got to stop talking about the portal and NIL when it comes to Dabo Swinney. Cool. Maybe you'll listen to, I don't know, Nick Saban because he had thoughts. We'll get those for you coming up later in the show. We will talk more about the NFC South. Can Carolina stay consistent into week two? And why are the Braves good now? 9 wins in a row? Going into the weekend, they get eliminated from the postseason. What are we doing? I'm Rob. He's Alonzo. You're listening to the Rob Brown Show. You're listening to the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Can the Carolina Panthers maintain consistency into week four? That is the question that this team will be asking to me all week long. How do we carry what we did last week into this week? How do we make sure that after opening the way that we opened and then turning around and hanging 30-0 on Atlanta in week three, how do we make sure that in week four we do the same thing? How do we make sure that when we are on the road at the New England Patriots this Sunday at Foxborough, a Patriots team that, by the way, if they decrease their turnover rate by one last week. They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. They lost with, five turnovers in that game, and they lost by a score. They needed one fewer. All they had to do was only turn the ball over four times, and they beat Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So how do you maintain consistency? And I am going to go with, it feels to me like a relatively simple answer. And it is something that the great one has been screaming about this team, metaphorically, sometimes literally, but mostly metaphorically, about this team a lot. Balance. Balance at the least, if not balance to the run. 30 rushing attempts, 24 passing attempts this weekend. I would say the second thing, and this is something that has, in my opinion, haunted this team dating back to week number one. The drops have to decrease. Now, I've already given you my theory on Xavier Leggett. I don't really think Xavier Leggett is, I'm not saying he's not banged up, but I don't think it's can't play banged up. I think Xavier Leggett is getting the Bryce Young treatment. We're going to give you an opportunity to sit, to get your head right. We're going to take all the pressure off of you, right? And the way that Dave Canales talked about him going into last weekend, it sounded to me like there may be a little bit more to this story than just minor injury and some R&R. It sounded like there may be some level of concern about where Xavier Leggett is mentally. And I'm not talking about anything dramatic. I'm just saying maybe it's a pressure buildup. Maybe he heard, unfortunately, the conversation where people were starting to question him.
He's got the yips. I mean, and how do you get past that?
And that's the question. I've been golfing for a very long time. I have seen dudes as high as on the tour, as low as guys that are, you know, country club champs in local tournaments. I have seen the yips. And the answer is, there is no answer. It just, you either do or you don't. You dial in, you try to take all the mental pressure off, right? You try to create a world where there's not a lot hanging over you so that you can just golf. Or in this case, you can just run your route, understand where you are in the field, and catch the football. And so I'm wondering if maybe that's what's happening here. But it is also the reason I've said a few times, Jalen Coker is eligible to return to this football team after this week. IR put him down for four games. He is eligible. Does not mean he will return, but he is eligible to return after 4 weeks. So after this weekend's game. And I do think that based on what we've seen out of Jalen Coker so far in his young career, Jalen Coker is a guy you have to make room for on this roster. And I do wonder if the timing of XL getting the hook wasn't to some degree related to, we're going to give you a week, I guess technically 2 weeks. We're going to give you 2 weeks. We're going to put you back in. Do we see Xavier Leggett back in the starting lineup this week? And we're going to give you a game to prove that you're the guy. Because outside of that, who of the pass catchers in the game this past weekend, right now today, who are you sitting down to put Jalen Coker in their roster spot? Because the only answer at this point, in my opinion, the only answer is Xavier Leggett. But that kind of goes part and parcel with the concept of consistency. Run the football. Be balanced, right? Like, I have zero problem. Y'all know I love me some BY, my special baby boy BY. I don't have a problem if you run the ball. Scratch that. I encourage you to run the ball more than you throw it. You should be utilizing the run in order to open up the field so that BY can play a more surgical pass game than feeling like every, you know, two downs, he's got to heave one down the field to McMillan or Tremble up the gut or whatever. Like, you can't do that. This is part of the reason that on Monday, yesterday, when we were breaking this game down, I said, if you look at the statistics here, 16 of 24, 121, no tutties, no picks for BY. I think a lot of people would look at that statistic and they would say, that's a pretty unimpressive NFL game out of a guy who's supposed to be a franchise quarterback. It's not that impressive of a stat line. But I would make the point that this was a game where sometimes you need your superstars to be superstars, and sometimes you need your superstar to just do what you need them to do within the context of the team. And I think BY this past weekend just did what BY needed to do in the context of the game itself. BY in the context of the game did not need big explosive plays. I would also point out again, there were once again for the third week in a row, too many drops. There were just too many drops. There were too many drops by the Carolina Panthers. And that is something that needs to be addressed and worked on. Atlanta just fired Ike Hilliard, their wide receiver coach. Why? Too many drops. Like, our wide receivers are not where they need to be. And when they are there, they're dropping the football. I'm going to play a clip for you in a little while. Raheem Morris was asked at a press conference yesterday why he decided to go to Kirk Cousins late in that game this weekend. And B, if Kirk Cousins is going to get an opportunity to earn the QB1 spot back. And Raheem Morris shut that down with a one word, no. And we'll talk about that coming up in a little while, because I got to tell you, as much grief as I've given Raheem Morris over the years, I thought that was an excellent moment in coaching. And I'll tell you why. But the point of this is that he is looking and going, we've got a situation where our young quarterback, and yes, I do still consider Bryce Young to be a young quarterback, our young quarterback is being impacted adversely by what another group of dudes on the football field are doing. And Raheem Morris, in my opinion, by shutting down the Kirk Cousins for QB1 talk as rapidly and as sternly as he did, was basically saying, that guy's not doing anything wrong. I mean, it's not that he's not doing anything wrong, but he's not doing that much wrong. He's not doing it so wrong that we're at a point that we feel like we need to give up on Michael Penix Jr. after three games. I've got to think, if the drops get cleaned up, statistically speaking, BY looks dramatically better. I would say, and we'll ask Rashad Beard about this on Friday, because this was a narrative that he and I were both talking about at the end of last year, the Panthers suffering from the dropsies. I asked Rashad, how many yards of total passing offense do you think were left on the field last year because of drops from receivers with BY passes that they needed to catch? And Rashad's answer was a lot, which is the correct answer. I would guess through three games so far, I would guess we've got to be close to 150, 160 dropped passing yards. And some of that is assumption of Yak Daddy yards. Some of that is assumption of that guy was open and he had another 6, 7, 10, 12 yards to play with after he made the catch before the drop. But I would suspect we're probably sitting on 100 and a half worth of yards that could be added to BY's passing yardage total right now as a direct result of drops. And I understand no player is going to be perfect. I understand no player is going to, not like, even the best wide receivers are going to have an oops-a-daisy every now and then. I'm not expecting perfection. What I am saying is, if we're not going to expect perfection, I still think we need to take into consideration what those numbers say and what those numbers mean. This game where BY ended with 121 passing yards, and the narrative about him over the week was, well, you know, yeah, like the run game carried 110 rushing yards, 73 from Chuba Hubbard. The run game carried him, yada, yada, yada. And I'm not saying that's untrue. I'm saying that's by design. It's supposed to be that way. But I think we've got to factor in probably 30 to 40 minimum dropped pass yards. BY probably sitting somewhere at like 150, 160, maybe a touchdown thrown in there. And even with that number, it was still very much do what you are supposed to do to make this team run as efficiently as possible. I don't think Carolina is a team yet or right now, or frankly will be, even if Teteroa McMillan continues to get better, because that dude looks like a dog. But even if he continues to get better, I think this team is not a team that is built, designed, or most efficiently going to operate with stars making star plays. It's going to operate by being efficient, economical with the football, limiting the possession time of the other team, keeping it to a minimum. I think those are the things that this team needs to do to be consistent in week three. I don't expect them to go on the road and go for 300, three touchdown through the air, 150 on the ground. I expect them to do what they did against Atlanta and have possession time that is 5-6 minutes better than New England's. Keep Drake May on the bench. And when he is out there, make him play in a way that he has to be a star to keep up with you. Because it is when players, especially underdeveloped players, have to be stars that they make mistakes. I think that was the case with Bryce Young in the first half of last year. When he came back and the pressure was off, and like that pressure was gone, now all of a sudden he's not trying to be a star. He's just going, how do I be efficient with the football? Do that, and the consistency shows up. I think. We'll see. When we come back, major scheduling news for the ACC and the SEC. It's not the same major scheduling news from yesterday. It's different major scheduling news. I'll tell you what it is next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Buddy, the Rob Brown Show back on your radio. It's the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great Milonzo, and you. 844-326-3663 is the number. 844-F-A-N-F-O-N-E. Two massive scheduling stories dumping yesterday. One out of the Southeastern Conference, one out of the Atlantic Coast Conference. We'll start with the SEC. The SEC is set today to release its new 9-game schedule for the 2026 season. The new schedule is going to feature a 9-game format for every team in the conference. Half of the teams in the conference will play 5 home games and 4 road games. The other half will play 4 home games and 5 road games. Those will rotate every year. You'll play 5 and 4 one year. You'll play 4 and 5 the next. The second biggest part of this is that every SEC team will play every SEC team every other year, meaning that if you play a full 4 years of college football, you will play every team in the conference at home and away at least one time during your time playing football in the SEC. The third revelation about this was that each team would be partnered up with 3 annual rivalries. You would have 3 teams that you play every year. Your other 6 games would be on a rotating basis. Alabama drew Auburn, Tennessee, and Mississippi State. Keep in mind, before I start reading you who got partnered up with who, that the SEC said when they would be designing these 3 annual rivalries for every team in the conference, that they would take into consideration a few things when deciding who would be partnered up with which other 2 teams. One of them was the protection of historic rivalries. They wanted to keep Texas and Texas A&M together. They wanted to keep Auburn and Alabama together. But there are a few spots where they did not necessarily do that. And we'll get to that coming up in a few minutes. Alabama gets partnered with Auburn, Tennessee, and Mississippi State. Right out of the gate, I have an issue. Now, it does make sense, obviously, that Alabama gets partnered with Auburn. The SEC is not going to do away with one of college football's best rivalry, the Iron Bowl. It makes sense that Alabama would get partnered up with Tennessee. They're not going to do away with the first Saturday in October, or second Saturday, whatever Saturday. That one Saturday in October. They're not going to do away with that rivalry. The Mississippi State one is interesting. And it does lead me to a spot, because I really would have thought that you would have seen Mississippi State out of this spot, and you would have seen LSU in this spot. LSU's 3 games are Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Texas A&M, the Colt. LSU Ole Miss makes sense. While it is not necessarily on the register nationally of the best rivalries in sports, this LSU-Ole Miss rivalry dates back like a century and some change. I have got friends and family down in Louisiana that are very fond of yelling very loudly on that week, "Go to hell, Ole Miss." And Ole Miss people in the Grove who are fond of yelling loudly, "Go to hell, LSU." That's like the catchphrase of that rivalry. So I get why that one stuck. But why did we do away with LSU-Florida? That game has, interestingly enough, over the past handful of years, has really shaped into kind of a fun rivalry, because it is 2 of the weirdest fan bases in sports. It's a bunch of drunk Cajuns down in Southeast Louisiana, and it's a bunch of jorts-wearing, corndog-eating weirdos down in Gainesville. Like, that rivalry has developed into something fun, but it was not protected. Instead, they give LSU Texas A&M. Like, I get what you're trying to do in playing into the Louisiana-Texas narrative there, because they are butted up against each other. But that's tough. Texas says you can't give Bama LSU. That would be the toughest draw by far. And that's very fair, if you believe that Auburn is a top-tier product right now. They did lose to Oklahoma this weekend. Not a bad loss. That's not a bad football team. But it's also a football team that, as we talked about quite a bit coming into this season, has a head coach that I think is a little bit fraudulent in Hugh Freeze, and a head coach that I suspect probably will not be the head coach much longer. Arkansas gets, obviously, LSU. They also get Texas and Missouri. This, like, Arkansas-LSU, there is a rivalry there with the trophy they play for. It's called the Golden Boot, Because if you look at Arkansas down in LSU with the little, it's not like a peninsula of LSU because it's landlocked, but not landlocked, but it's only coastal on one side. So it looks like a boot. You get it. The golden boot.
I don't know why you're going for an extreme explanation here. Everyone knows it looks like a boot.
Yeah, but like there's different kinds of boots. You know,
That's how people remember that state.
Because it doesn't really look
especially
like
when you're a kid, you're like, okay, this is that thing.
Yeah. It's a boot. Like, you got the four corners. We all know, what is it, Wyoming, Utah, Colorado, and Arizona form the four corners. Michigan makes the glove. You get it. Florida's the one that smells bad. You get it. There's ways to remember states. I'm from there. I can say it.
Okay, because I
you can't say it.
I don't remember.
I'm from there.
Well, I can say what I want, but I don't remember, and I still haven't been there, so I don't know. Maybe it does stink.
But, like, that rivalry is not one that, at least my family, like, nobody at LSU looks at Arkansas as if it's, like, a big rivalry. Like, oh, yeah, can't wait for that big Arkansas game. I don't know. Some of these are weird. Auburn gets Alabama, no shock. They get Georgia, no shock. That's the oldest rivalry in the South. If you're protecting historic rivalries, that's the most historic one. And as a little bit of a bone thrown in, Auburn's final opponent is Vanderbilt. Now, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, that would have been like a, hey, thanks, SEC, for taking care of us. You gave us Alabama, and you gave us Georgia. Thanks for throwing us towards the bottom for the third one. But, like, now, that's not really a thing. Like, Auburn gave, or Vandy gave Auburn everything they wanted last year. Georgia gets Auburn, Florida, and partner number one for the University of South Carolina. You get Georgia annually moving forward, which, when we asked the question a couple of weeks ago when this format was announced, we asked South Carolina fans, which three SEC schools do you want to be partnered up with for your annual rivalries? I will say, if I recall correctly, I think Georgia was the only one that, like, the majority of you guys said needed to be an annual rival. It needed to be Georgia. That makes sense. You're next door. I get it. Georgia gets Auburn, Florida, South Carolina. Florida gets Georgia, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Screw you, Greg Sankey. That's what it is, was, and forever shall be. Kentucky and partner number two for the Gamecocks of South Carolina. You will play Florida on an annual basis moving forward. And Kentucky, Florida, Tennessee, and partner number three for the Gamecocks of South Carolina. Your three annual opponents are the Georgia Bulldogs, the Florida Gators, and the Kentucky Wildcats. Zoe, is that the right three partners for South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, and Kentucky?
Sure, and if you look historically how they played those three opponents, it's been interesting, especially the Georgia thing. And you may think, and it may be true, that Georgia has the advantage as far as record goes, but there was a time back in the day when South Carolina and Georgia played
every year.
You wanted to watch because you didn't know what the score might be, 15-12 or something weird like that.
Obviously, some of them are playing into historic rivalries. Some of them are playing into geographic rivalries, right? Like Georgia, South Carolina, they're next door. And that's a type of rivalry that can impact recruiting in a big way too, right? Like if South Carolina was to theoretically roll off 2 or 3 against Georgia, well, maybe those recruiting tentacles of South Carolina start to spread over into the little towns halfway between here and Atlanta.
And Kentucky has to do with sunglasses.
I absolutely think it does. Here was my question, though. If I gave you the choice between South Carolina, Kentucky, and South Carolina, Mizzou, who would be the third squad there? Or is there somebody else? Is there a dark horse?
Who would you rather play? Definitely Kentucky.
Yeah, I think you'd rather play Kentucky. But if we were looking at this through the lens of creating the most entertaining annual rivalries of all, Kentucky has fallen off a cliff. Like, they had one or two good years there under Mark Stoops, under not Bob Stoops. They had one or two good years where it's like, oh, maybe Kentucky's on the rise. They stink now. Like, they might be the worst team in the Southeastern Conference now. So, I get you would rather play them from the standpoint of, like, let's have a win on the schedule every year. But I kind of feel like Mizzou has kind of become the baby rivalry for South Carolina. I kind of feel like that's the baby rivalry now. The Battle of Columbia, the Mayor's Cup, right? And I guess there is some element of you're still going to be playing them every other year. Like home, then off a year, then away, then off a year, then home, whatever. And I think that's great because I do think if you only have the opportunity to earn the cup back. First off, South Carolina fans, genuine question. Do you care about the Mayor's Cup? Like, they made this thing a thing, obviously, because you both play in a town called Columbia, and cool, fun. We'll do anything we can do to, like, hype a thing in college football. It's wrestling. Anything you can do to hype your match, you're going to do it. But is the Mayor's Cup a thing that you guys, like, when it comes back to Columbia, South Carolina, is it sitting out front of the football building as, like, a thing we accomplished?
How long does it have to be around before it's historic? Because Missouri hasn't been in the SEC that long, I don't think. Maybe.
I mean, longer than Texas A&M Oklahoma.
That's true, but still. I mean,
I get it. I guess that's kind of why I'm asking the question. Like, do South Carolina fans have any level of care, respect, whatever, about the Mayor's Cup, or does this kind of feel like a forced rivalry? Texter says, as a South Carolina fan, I've always hated the narrative of us and Mizzou. The rivalry feels forced. I'm glad we aren't playing them every year. I get that. Like, that's kind of the question I'm asking. Is it a forced rivalry? The answer would be yes, but I would also say you guys have had some football games the last couple of years, including this year. It was a game. I'm disappointed in how South Carolina played, but it was a game. All right, real quick. Through the rest of these, and we'll talk more about this, and we'll get to the ACC scheduling announcement in the next hour. Florida gets Georgia, Kentucky, South Carolina. Kentucky gets Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee. LSU gets Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Arkansas. Two classic rivalries enforcing the Louisiana-Texas narrative. Mississippi State gets Alabama, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt. That one actually kind of makes sense to me. Missouri gets Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M. I'm fine with that. I think the old Big 12 teams should probably be in a gravitational orbit with each other. Mizzou gets Arkansas, Oklahoma, and A&M. Oklahoma gets Mizzou, Ole Miss, and Texas. Ole Miss gets LSU, obviously. Mississippi State, obviously. And Oklahoma. That one kind of feels a little forced, but we'll come back to that later. South Carolina, as we mentioned, Georgia, Florida, and Kentucky. Tennessee gets Alabama, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. I really would have preferred Tennessee, Georgia. That's the right matchup there, right? Like, I think Tennessee-Georgia would have been a better classic rivalry. Texas gets Arkansas and Oklahoma and Texas A&M. That one they absolutely got right. Texas A&M gets LSU, Mizzou, and Texas. All right, like, fine. Vandy gets Auburn, Mississippi State, and Tennessee, obviously, annually. We'll talk more about these later on in the show. We'll get your ACC scheduling news when we come back. Texter says the Columbia Cup feels forced, but it is a fun rivalry. That's what I would agree with. Like, it feels like a forced rivalry, but it's kind of gotten a little fun. You know what's not forced and is always fun? A sports flash.
The Detroit Lions improved 2-1 with a 38-30 win over the Ravens on Monday night. Baltimore had the ball down a field goal with minutes to play, but Derrick Henry's third fumble in three games allowed Detroit to pad the lead. David Montgomery starred for the Lions, rushing for 151 yards and a pair of touchdowns, and Jahmyr Gibbs added two more on the ground. The Atlanta Braves were eliminated from the playoffs last weekend, but have been white hot down the stretch, winning nine consecutive games with last night's 11-5 win over the Nationals. Atlanta had 14 hits, including a Ronald Acuna Jr. home run. Auburn basketball coach Bruce Pearl stepped down unexpectedly yesterday after guiding Auburn to its second ever Final Four appearance. Pearl has been with the Tigers for 11 years. His son Steven was immediately promoted to head coach and given a five-year contract. Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show is coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.